Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
You're listening to the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on HoopFeed.com.
Hey everybody, this is David Siegel welcoming you to a special edition of Dishin' and Swishin's podcast this week, and I am pleased to welcome, but not under these circumstances, back to the podcast, Katie Douglas, who has recently announced her retirement after an incredible career that I was fortunate enough to see a lot of being in Connecticut. So, Katie, welcome back to Dishin' and Swishin'. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, first thing is, like you said, we already mentioned we're doing this in the morning because this way Katie can make bingo tonight. And, you know, what other good tournaments do we have coming up? Canasta? Did you take up Mahjong? Or,
you know? No, it's a lot of bingo, like you said, shuffleboard. I'm starting to get into that at my assisted living community. I've got a great roommate, you know, it's been wonderful thus far.
So is there like a, do you guys set up like a retired players club where you guys get together every couple months for drinks and to laugh at all the youngsters still playing this game?
No, not yet, but just since I'm new to the club, you know, I might look into that. But honestly, I've had so many former teammates, just overwhelming amount of response and just the kind words and just the support that they had for me, and definitely look forward to just catching up with all the players that are still playing throughout the summer in various cities. So I definitely look forward to the summer and the season to catch up with a lot of people.
Well, I mean, obviously this was not something that you had planned, and it was not something that you had wanted to do under these circumstances, suffering injury. But, you know, could you just, you know, go over with our listeners what exactly has happened with the back since it got hurt in last fall at the end of the season?
Yeah, so I got hurt, and I kind of just tried to keep it quiet because I really honestly thought that it was more of a back spasm kind of thing, and I didn't want people to overreact or anything. So, but I knew it was hurting pretty bad. It happened in a game, and then the last few games I wasn't able to play, but I was able to kind of get calmed down with some heavier medicines that I had to use to get my back to kind of calm down. So that was a little bit different. It was totally at a different place. It was in my mid-back where I was having some excruciating pain. It was nowhere near my surgery site in my low back. It was my mid-back that was going haywire. So it was just a scary feeling in the sense that nothing had ever happened to my mid-back before. So it was that happened. I, you know, talked to my doctors, my team doctors, the son. They were all amazing. And just trying to get me to be able to stand up because it was a few days that I was just pretty much on bed rest. So once we got to that point where it will get things calmed down, talked to my doctor in L.A. as well, my surgeon, and, you know, the best answers that I was getting at that time early on was just rest and rehab, you know, take it easy and let's let everything calm down. So I followed those orders, did that, and it just wasn't progressing. I was still having just difficulty in day-to-day life and just really struggling every day. And so as the time went on, I was starting to get nervous timeline-wise. So, you know, again, was talking to Connecticut and then talking to my doctor. And then finally, in, you know, mid to late January, I went back out to L.A. and, you know, he reexamined me and, you know, just basically went over the risks that I would be falling into as far as if I wanted to play. He definitely wasn't advising me to play, you know, but he's not going to make that kind of decision for me. But he was definitely just being upfront and being honest about the potential risks that I could face as far as quality of life and future and permanent back pain and permanent damage to my back. So, you know, once I had that meeting with him, that was a pretty devastating meeting and kind of time for me. You know, I was out there and had to get back to Indy and just was a mess emotionally and mentally and kind of physically as well. So it was just, it was kind of crazy how it all played out. But then I just had to just process through it, process through that appointment, process through the pros, the cons of me playing, me not playing, because I felt like as an athlete, as many of us know, we just try to push on and carry on. And, you know, we hate to be told no, and we like to control things. And I felt like the control and the power was being taken out of my hands. So it was a long process, but I'm so thankful for Connecticut and all the support that they gave me. You know, just I think more so emotionally, because it was a tough decision that I wrestled with.
You know, one of the things that is in your case, it appears, you know, a lot of times, you know, you can deal with a knee sometimes, I think, or something like that, that just happens. But in the circumstances with a back or something like that, this is, it seems like it's an accumulation of all these years of playing year round, and it just builds on itself, and it's a difficult cycle to break.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I still remember, you know, Taj McWilliams and a lot of players saying, you can't do this to your body. You've got to, you know, you can't play 11 years consecutively. And I was like, at the time, I'm like, no, I'm fine. Everything, you know, I feel great, you know, because I felt like I was taking care of my body, even though I was playing 11 months year round. But I felt like I was doing the best I could, given the circumstances. But, you know, I probably should have adhered to some of those lessons early on and not played full seasons every season. Because it does. I mean, I'm sure it's the main reason that my back is kind of, you know, physically unable to take that kind of stuff is just because of all the miles and all the impact and all the contact and just the not only the play but the travel. I mean, the things that we've had to go through or I've had to go through over 14 years, it just puts a tremendous toll on my back. And it's not like I'm thankfully going to be permanently impaired per se, but you know, there's still activities that I don't feel like I'll ever be able to do the rest of my life because of my back. But you know, I still feel like I still have a pretty good quality of life, and I just didn't want to put that in jeopardy, and I feel like I would be putting that in jeopardy if I tried to play this summer.
Now, that won't be a segue for us, as we you know, one of the things I like to do with players when they're retired is talk about things going on in the game and over your careers and such. Let's talk for a second then about the current situation with Taurasi and Parker sitting out at least part of the season. That sounds to me like that's a ringing endorsement that you give for that type of decision that they've made.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's everybody has their own perspective, and I'm going through, you know, my own thing in retiring and being kind of injury, you know, forced to retire, and like we just talked about the amount of miles and just the amount of stress I put on my back. So I'm going to give a different perspective because I'm in a different place and point in my career. But I still feel like if I was younger and I got that same offer that Diana got, I mean, I would probably take it as well. I understand that it's a tough decision. Nobody wants to have to make that decision, but you ultimately, your brand, and you have to protect yourself and you protect the lifespan of your career. So I understand completely why she did that. It's an incredible offer to sit out one summer, and that could really extend her career. So, you know, hats off to her for having the courage to do it, for getting that opportunity from a Russian team. And, you know, it's got to come to a point where, you know, both leagues have to maybe – try to make some kind of concessions as far as the amount of time that each league wants players to play. You know, I understand that they're running a business too, but you know, the players are getting worn down and exhausted. You know, I talk to players all the time, and everybody, the first words I hear is just exhausted. So it's a grind, you know, if you're going to play year-round and do the WNBA and the Europe thing. So I think that we need to try to find somehow a better balance and get some players some rest.
Now, one of the things that you have gone through as you've played over the years is you've relocated, you've seen the game change. You know, you've played for a really good length of time, obviously. So what's different? What do you see out there now from when you came in with Orlando and played down there to the game that you're leaving now? You know, what is the biggest adjustment or change that you've seen just from then to now?
I would definitely say the level of talent the level of talent has grown so much from my first days, just knowing training camp rosters to now. Just I feel like girls are just so much better and so much more prepared when they leave college to enter the professional game. And it's more about quantity, too. Back when I started, I felt like there was a very limited quantity of elite players and players that could step right in and play at the professional level. But I feel like now there is way more quality and quantity of players that can come in and have an impact their first year, whereas definitely my first few years that was not the case. But I feel like collegiately they're getting better prepared, you know, because like I've told people, when I was going to college, I wasn't preparing for the WNBA because there wasn't a WNBA until I think my junior season. So I feel like this generation now has the WNBA. It's an established league, it's a successful league, and they have that mindset and that goal and that determination to get better at college, whereas when I was coming out, it was a new thing. Nobody was ultimately focusing on it because it was kind of an unknown thing. But now girls are really prepared to come in and play professionally.
Now, that also is good news, going back to the last statement, that obviously that if people are going to need to take some time and sit out some seasons, there is additional talent that can at least help fill the void and take the place. One of the things that I've always been impressed with you, being first as a season ticket holder with the Sun and then observing you as a part of the media, is you've always seemed to get it when it comes to relating with the people. You always smile, even if people stopped you outside of Mohegan Sun's arena. You know, in the concourse, in the mall area, you always stopped, you smiled, and you signed autographs. Do you think that the players of today still feel the need or still get that and understand that it's still necessary to do those types of things to grow the game?
I sure hope so, and I appreciate your kind words. I really try to really be able to connect with the fans, because I think that the WNBA is unique in that sense that we really do, you know, I guess I am like a pioneer because I was there so many years, but, you know, we really try to connect and make ourselves accessible with the fans. And hopefully, you know, the other players that I was surrounded around were able to see me do that and to kind of leave that kind of impression for them. And I still feel like there's still older players in the game that still do that. I know Tamika's one that will always do that as well. So hopefully enough older players are setting an example and making sure that the younger generation understands how important it is to have the fans connect with you and have you be accessible. You know, I definitely think it still needs to definitely stay intact like that, because we need this game to grow and we need more fans. We've got tremendous and amazing fans, but we definitely, you know, would love to have some more. So I feel like, you know, it's very important. Again, we're a unique league where we give access to fans and let them get up close and, you know, take pictures, sign autographs, have, you know, conversations, everything. So we really want to get to know the fans, and we want the fans to get to know us, you know, off the court. So I hope that it continues. I hope that I've left that kind of foundation, and I'm pretty sure that other players at my age that are still playing still continue to do that as well.
Well, there was no question that last year's group was a young one with the Sun, and you did leave a mark with them. You could see it as the season went on that, you know, the veteran leadership that you brought to that team was significant. And, you know, the coaching staff has done that, has said that as well. So, you know, I think that franchise at least is in the right path in terms of fan relations and what you've left. Now, one thing I'd like to ask you about now is you've also, you know, being in the different site, you've played under some pretty impressive coaches over the years, from, you know, Lynn to Mike. So who did you like playing for the most?
Oh man, that's a hot seat kind of question. Like I'm a Stephen A. Smith right now.
Well, no, I would have used bigger words and said that Floyd Mayweather is great if it was Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, exactly. That's hard to say. You know, I feel like each coach is that I've really enjoyed playing for each coach. You know, I had Carolyn too. I had D. Brown. I had some really great experiences. So. But I think overall, impact-wise, would probably have been Tebow, you know, because he was in my kind of prime of my career, and is really, it was kind of the turning point of my career where he sat me down and, you know, told me, you know, you're going to have to find a way to, you know, make an impact in this league. You're a good player, but he wanted to make me a great player. And he really worked with me one-on-one, becoming a better shooter, becoming a better ball handler, and becoming a pick-and-roll player. So I feel like, you know, because I was in my prime, he really set the tone for me and told me how to, you know, make my mark in this league and how to stay in the league and how to be extremely successful in the league. So I would say him as far as impact-wise. But, you know, I love playing for Lynn. I've known Lynn my whole life, so that was a great experience as well. And then just having only 1 year, but to play for a coach like Ann was a tremendous experience as well. So it's tough to say, you know. And then obviously when I got drafted with Carolyn Peck, it was just, I mean, I don't even know how to say it. It was just incredible to have played for her and won a national championship, and then just have the opportunity to play for her again as a professional, just to kind of ease my way. I just feel like it was a blessing for me to have gotten drafted by her. So, you know, it's my first time leaving the state of Indiana, and just not to have too much thrown at me. I just at least had a comfort zone in her being my coach. So that was incredible as well.
Players that you've played with and players that you've played against have also been tremendous. Catchings, of course, jumps to mind as one of the all-time greats, as both on and off the court. Taj also, you know, it was the original mentor, I think, for everybody, and it seems, in the league. Any teammates that particularly jump out at you when you think of it? Said, you know, not best teammates, not best players, but teammates. You say, you know, this was just a great person to play with that I liked having on the team.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I don't really honestly think that there were too many, like, bad teammates. It's just incredible how many teammates that I still talk to day to day. Ketch just texted me yesterday, so she's obviously an amazing teammate. But, you know, more importantly, just a friend and a constant in my life. You know, Taj was an amazing, like you said, mentor. Keisha was an amazing player and mentor for me as well. But players that, like you said, maybe their greatness in on the court, but just their greatness in a friendship wise. Man, there's so many. There's crazy. Aaron Phillips comes to mind, great friend of mine. Shavonte Zellis, Erlena Larkins, Jessica Moore is like the truest friend. Shea Murphy. I've got so many like great friends that you know, I know that they can call me if they ever need anything, and I can call them just to, you know, bounce things off of them. But there's just so many other players. I don't want to offend anybody out there. I just kind of woke up, so my mind's a little foggy. You know, the retirement home.
So no problem, and we won't put. I won't push you on it either. Don't worry about that. Now let's go.
I mean, it's honestly like what I wrote to a bunch of personal texts and to friends is, you know, it's great being your teammate, but it's, you know, it's so much more just having the lifelong friendships that I feel like that we're going to have. So I feel like, you know, it was great playing basketball, but just the relationships and the friendships that I've developed over the 14 years is what, you know, I care about the most.
Now go the other way and let's look at some of your opponents for a sec. You were an all-defensive team choice many, many times. That was one of your pride and joys, I know, was your ability to defend. Who are the toughest defends out there that you've played over the years? Just a couple.
comes to mind now, Maya Moore. She's got a motor that never stops, and she is incredibly strong and obviously talented to go with that. She's just relentless on both ends, so... She's tough guard, Angel McCautry, because she's just so dynamic and athletic. She's a tough guard at my position. You know, I'm not going to name, you know, five players because I don't generally guard them.
Nope.
I'm going to name wing players. Let's see. I've kind of like disconnected myself from the basketball world for a minute. But those are two that I feel like every scouting report, and I knew that they were going to be my matchup. So those are two that I was definitely always trying to get extra rest before the game and eat extra protein because those two were tough guards just for me personally because they were just, I feel like, one of the two most dynamic players at that position.
Now, the teams that you've had tremendous success, on the court as well. But do you ever take a look back at, the series against Seattle, Sacramento, Phoenix, and say, damn, we were so close?
I know. It's like, I do. I do now because it was like when you're going through it, you can't even focus on that. You're focused on so many other things. But, yeah, when you think about, like, how close we were in Seattle and in that Phoenix series, and it's just like, man, like, one change of possession or one,
one healthy
player.
How about healthy players?
Yeah, or one healthier player, could have really changed the series. But, at the end of the day, that's what should have happened. Everybody gave their best, but it's just it's what it's supposed to be. But it's just crazy to think about if I could have made one more shot or one more stop or something, and could have really changed the outcome. But I think as players and as athletes, again, we like to control things, and those things are out of our control. But it is crazy to look back and think about those series in particular and how close we were to winning championships.
Now, the one thing that you did get, though, more than anybody, that very few people can claim, is you've got that NCAA title that, now in this day and age, they're harder and harder to come by with, it just seems only a few teams dominating, but Purdue is one of those, that was an incredible college team.
Yeah, that's, like you said, it's hard to come by unless you're up there in Storrs, Connecticut these days, so... It's definitely one of the most proud accomplishments of my career is to have been on that journey with that team. We knew that team was going to break up pretty much after our sophomore year with Carolyn leaving and just the uncertainty. So we really wanted to make the most of that year. My sophomore year is the year that we won. And we went won most games, only lost one. And the funny thing was that we were still the underdogs. So it was just an incredible ride. And definitely memories that we still talk about to this day.
Now, what a lot of people don't realize is, in addition in that, that year that you guys won the championship, you were a recipient, and I wasn't even aware of this, of the inaugural V Foundation Award for your comeback and being able to play after all you had gone through in college. That's pretty elite company off the court in addition to just to being an athlete.
Yeah, I think I've said that time and time again over various questionnaires and whatnot. It was, like you said, the inaugural year, so a lot of people didn't even know what it really was or what it meant. But, I had the opportunity to kind of get to talk to the Balbano family and when I won and stuff. And again, I didn't know what it was because it was the inaugural year. But then once everybody explained everything, it was, to this day, I still say it's one of my individual most proud accomplishments, having won that and received that award. I just thought it was just a tremendous award and just a testament not only to myself. I said this at my Purdue Hall of Fame thing. It's not a testament to myself. It's a testament to the circle that I keep, the friends and the family and the network that I keep that keep me grounded, that are my foundation and that are my rocks. And, I truly believe that without the people that I keep in my circle, my success would have been very limited without those people. So it's just really a testament to everybody, keeping me on path, helping me push through adversity, making sure I stayed grounded and stayed focused and stayed determined, because it definitely was not easy at all times.
And you even just you just throw out there and slide in like nobody else heard was, of course, the Purdue Hall of Fame thing. Yeah, that also was pretty impressive. And that, especially when you look back now at what's going on this year with you having the injuries and needing to step away from the game, that seems like a pretty good place to end the career, is right there, as being part of the 2015 class of Purdue's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable honor, and it was it's funny because it was something that the athletic director and I had been trying to work on for years. Actually, we were going to do it in, I think, 08, 09, and we had already made the plaque up and everything, but unfortunately, due to overseas commitments, I was unable to attend. So it wasn't, I don't want to tell anybody, it was a complete shock because it was something that we'd been working on, me getting back. During the springtime, it was just my schedule was terrible when I was playing overseas to make that happen. So, but once it came into realization this spring that I'd be available, I think it was more than I can probably put into words, but it was just an incredible experience to go back up there to see the campus because I don't often get up there to see everything that they've done. And how they're trying to push forward and set a tradition and grow on that tradition. But then also to have done the Hall of Fame experience and to have talked to the other athletes that were inducted at the same time, you know, it was just incredible. When they throw up the statistics of the number of athletes that are in the Hall of Fame versus the number of athletes that have played and competed at Purdue, it's a very unique and small list of athletes. So it's definitely a huge honor, and I'm humbled, and I'm definitely grateful for them honoring me, and really proud to be part of the rich tradition and legacy at Purdue.
Okay, now to wrap this up, a couple of questions for you. Now you can either give me a short answer, no answer, or however what you want, because these are the questions that are the iffy ones, okay? So no one will give you any crap if you don't want to answer. First,
all right.
First, UConn dominance, good for NCAA basketball or no?
I say good for NCAA basketball.
Think that other teams need to match up with them? Does it push?
I do. I say, you know, I'm a competitor, and I think it's good that they set the bar, and it's time for other teams to get better. And do better.
Glory.
That's not harsh enough.
Brittany Griner and Glory Johnson, this whole thing that's come out, does the league need to get involved and issue some sort of a statement or punishment, or is this something that's personal business that the league doesn't need to be a part of?
I think that the league is going to get involved and issue a statement and hand down some punishments. I believe that would be the appropriate course of action.
First thought when you heard Isaiah Thomas was being hired to be part of the New York Liberty.
Wait, what? that was kind of it. Wait, what? but I think, you know, we were actually watching, I think it was the 30 for 30 last night on the Pistons with Isaiah and stuff in it. So interesting, very interesting. You know, we'll see how it kind of pans out. Interesting.
Bill Laimbeer as a coach, as an opposing player, was he bothersome, annoying, or funny?
A, B, and C. He was A, B, and C. When he was bothersome because they were probably winning, annoying because they were probably winning, but funny when you were beating him and he was over there. Not enjoying himself.
That's a good way to put it. Favorite country to play in?
Favorite country?
Yeah. International.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's tough. I would probably say Turkey, Istanbul. Great fans and just a great city. It's Greece as well, Athens. It's pretty much they're the same kind of city. So between those two, I mean, they were incredible cities. But as far as, like, basketball experience-wise, Istanbul, because it has a better basketball, let's say, tradition and experience. So, but then off the court, it's just an amazing city to live in.
If you could change one rule in the WNBA, what would it be?
Oh, man. I'm not sure. That's a tough one. I don't know off the top of my head. What would you change?
I would like to see, you know what, there's so many of them that could be good and do that. I would love to see some way that they can uniformly call blocks and charges. That's,
oh, yeah.
Which leads to my next question. You don't have to answer this. Did you take all those charges, or do you admit to being a master flopper at times?
I didn't even take that many charges, so I don't know where I get this reputation. Like, I don't like taking charges. Like, that was not, especially like last year, that was not even honestly up for discussion that I would take a charge. Like, I didn't feel like my back could take it, but I wasn't really a charge taker. I don't know how I got this reputation, because that was not me to stand there and let somebody run me over. That's not, I don't know.
That's not fun.
To look up. I don't feel like I have that many charges. Like, if you look at, like, Tamika or somebody, like, she takes way more charges than I did.
Yeah, well, and Tamika gives a lot more charges than most people, too.
Yeah, if people think I'm a flopper, but honestly, like, I'm not a charge taker, because I feel like as a player, I'm going to try to, I don't know, like, I'm going to find a way to stop you without, I don't know, taking a charge. Like, that's just not, I don't know, I'm not even good at it. Like, I'm not a good charge taker.
it was never anything that I really thought. I've always had people over the years say to me, that you used to flop a lot, and I don't, you know, maybe it's on the offensive side, you know.
Yeah, on the defensive side, there's absolutely no charge taking or flopping, like, because that's not my game, like, at all. I'm not good at it. Like, I'm like Brianne January. There's like some players that are really good at like stepping in and taking charges.
Mm-hmm.
I would never put me in that class ever, because I mean we used to get paid charge money, and I was like broke. That's just not my game.
Well, we'll say it's more on the offensive side, foul
yeah.
line, to the foul
yeah,
line.
Maybe on the offensive side, but definitely I'm not a charger or flopper on the defensive side, because that's
I will say that with you drawing fouls on one end, and when Kara Lawson was there with the Reggie Miller take the jump shot and fall down after taking it. You know, I did see some pretty good people drawing fouls in Connecticut, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, offensively, but, I mean, I feel like I wouldn't say I'm a flopper. I would say I'm a seller. Like, if they're going to, like, hold and they're going to, you know, do some things, I'm going to sell it. Like, but as a flopper, like, I don't really fall down because – I don't know.
Then you got to get up, and that's no fun.
You got to get up, exactly, and that's hard for
It's much better to stay on those feet than getting off of them.
That's what I try to tell people. Like, I can't be – you have to go get that loose ball, because at my age, I can't get it.
Yeah, which brings us back to where we were to start this. What's next?
What's next? Well, I just rang 36th birthday yesterday.
Well, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. So it's – you know, I don't know. I was really honestly, like I said in the press conference, planning on playing this summer. So it's all kind of been thrown at me pretty quick as far as not playing. So I don't have a plan. I don't think I want a plan exactly right now. I just kind of want to take some deep breaths again. Like I said, it was really, really hard for me to come to grips and to come to terms with my career being cut short, so it wasn't in my plan. And I'm not a big planner, but when it came to basketball and it came to like contracts and stuff, I always wanted to fulfill my contract and you know, go play to the plan. So this isn't my plan. So I'm just kind of trying to feel out what is my plan. I'd love to stay involved in the professional game in some capacity. So I'm just trying to figure out what it is that I'm passionate about, because I was blessed to be able to play that many years and have a job that I was passionate about. So I'd like to really try to find that thing after basketball that kind of makes me the same feeling that I had as a player, passionate and have fun and have energy for. So I would like to find that now in a career, but what that is, I'm still trying to figure it out. But, you know, thankfully I've been blessed that I don't have to, you know, find a job tomorrow. I'm just going to kind of take some time, take some deep breaths, and figure it out.
Well, Katie, I want to thank you as a fan and as a member of the media for all that you've done for the WNBA. It's been great being a part of your career in some small way. And, you know, good luck to you enjoying your summer. It's been a while since you've had time to just enjoy one, like you said. And, you know, we hopefully will see you in various arenas visiting people over the course of the summer.
Absolutely, and I thank you so much for being a great fan, friend, and a great media person. It's been a pleasure working with you, and you'll most definitely see me around, like you said, in different arenas these next few years.
Well, thank you, and take care and enjoy.
All right, thanks so much.